episode 97.
Yeah, 97.
97 of Drunk on Comics. Or as I like to call it, the ever-rotating two reviewers, two people out recovering every other week since we can't ever get all here together.
I'm surprised you even remember it's called Drunk on Comics for the amount of alcohol you imbued over the last week in Vegas.
Yes. Listeners, I couldn't be here last week, one of my first times missing it, because I was having a fucking time of my life.
Third time missing it.
Okay, well, didn't know someone was keeping track. Jeez. Hey, I kind of remembered what number we were on.
Yeah. So, welcome, everybody. This is Drunk on Comics. This is our weekly podcast where we're going to talk about comic books, do some reviews, talk some industry news, maybe talk a little bit about, well, conventions, collecting, whatever happens to roll out of our filthy mouths. And
maybe some life adventures, some life lessons.
Yeah.
Some life. Yeah.
Some could-bes. But
life cereal?
Life cereal. Oh, the game of life.
Oh.
Yeah. But yeah, my name's Derek. Tony's with me once again. Glad to have him back. Like he said, he did miss a week. Matt is still on sabbatical. Kevin had to take a weekend off. And so it's just going to be the two of us sitting around quaffing a few brews and talking some shit.
Yeah, and hopefully we have a dynamic duo between us. I don't know if it's just been you and me before, but...
Well, yeah, it was. Actually, not too long ago.
Yeah, no, well, and in the beginning, too. I mean,
yeah, it's... well, at the very beginning. Yeah, but I don't know, it was a couple months ago. You and I recorded one just by ourselves.
Yep.
But, all right, well, we're going to get things kicked off with Off the Shelf. This is where we're going to talk about a few of the books that came out this week. Ones that we liked the most and that we thought we should share with you. Just a heads up that we will be talking about things that went on in the comics, so if you want to read your comics first, now's your chance. Otherwise, you've been warned. Let's see.
I can go first.
Before we do.
Oh.
Off the Shelf's brought to you once again by Motor City Comic Con.
Comic-Con.
Yeah, it's going to be May 16th through the 18th in Novi, Michigan at the Suburban Collection Showplace. Check out their full guest list on MotorCityComicCon.com. Buy your tickets in advance. It's going to be a massive show. And probably the biggest named guest out of everybody that's going to be there right now is us.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, we're kidding, because if people really think that,
no. Yeah,
there's people way huger than us. But
there are. There, and they're adding more on a daily basis. Yeah. Great media guests there. Huge names in the comic book industry, all around fun show. But yes, we will be there. We are the biggest name, but I'd like to pretend.
Yeah. We'll make it someday.
Yeah. Shatner's going to come to us for an autograph. But all right, Tony, why don't you go ahead and kick it off with one of your books this week?
All right. Well, one of the many books I read this week was Iron Fist, The Living Weapon by Carr Andrews. And I want to start off with, in any comic book, I love when the artist, the writers, anyone that's involved within the book kind of gives either a synopsis, gives their thoughts. I know in the back of a lot of more indie books, you get the thoughts from the writer while writing this particular, you know, issue. And it doesn't happen a lot within the big two. This one, though, he pretty much wrote a thing of him picking up one of his first books, Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., and explaining how that got him into kind of comic books. But not only that, how back in the day, comic books used to be a one- or two-person team, not the big machine that they have right now with multiple artists, a penciler, a stenciler, a colorist, writer, this and that, like teams of like 50, where really it should only take one or two people to do it. And that's where I like what he did with this and taking it, which is what made this book so good, is he was the writer and the artist. He did both those tasks, which made it more of his baby and made it, I'm not going to diss anyone that, you know, has those giant teams, but you can tell kind of a little more love in the art and the story and the writing when it's just one person.
Well, I think what it really helps with is when you have a clear vision of exactly what it is that you want to happen, there isn't a problem with interpretation, you know, between the script, you know, the written word on the script and the artist. And, you know, in some cases we get book like a book like Hacktivist, where we interviewed the guys here a couple weeks back, where they work very closely with their artist. But mm-hmm. in other situations, you have the artist submits the script. The script is then sent to the artist, and they it's possible they've never met in person, maybe haven't even talked on the phone or via email for that matter.
Yeah.
So yeah, it can make a huge difference in what the final product is, I think, when you have a book like Iron Fist.
Yep, and Marvel had a lot of new number ones, all single issues of characters that came out this week. And this was one of them that I've always been kind of interested in the character. Not super, I can't wait till that book comes out, but enough so of like, I'm hoping this might have a little bit of origin or a little bit backstory to find out a little bit more who he is. And it gives just enough to where I'm like, sweet, I never knew that about him. But then it doesn't give you enough to where you're like, damn it, I need to keep buying this to find out more. Obviously, he has his chi-type powers that makes him a living weapon. His hands pretty much can turn into iron when they're in fists.
hence, a living weapon.
Yeah. But, I mean, they don't really turn into iron, but pretty much he gets his arms blazing and it's like super punch, whatever. But he was also explaining within the book, I don't want to give too many of the details away, but in the beginning, they're talking about this trip that he was taking that his father was trying to find. I fucking forgot the name of the town.
Are you talking Kunlun?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That his father kept saying it's out there, kept going, and they're in the mountains, and an avalanche happens. And I never knew this part of his story, that his parents pretty much died. And it still left off of how he got off this mountain, if he found it or not. I'm sure they're going to explore it a little bit more in better detail. But besides going some flashbacks to then, he's kind of to now of he's just going through his routine. He's just kind of doing his thing. His corporation, he kind of, you know, inherited it when his father and someone else died within the company. So he's a rich playboy, like most superheroes nowadays. And when he gets attacked in the middle of the night after, I don't know, sleeping with some random chick, he's fighting, and then his powers kind of just fizzled out a bit. Like, he didn't have then his glowing fists, but...
So he was more like aluminum fists? not quite as strong as iron?
Wooden fists, maybe? Splinters. I'll give you splinters. No, but what was great about the writing and just about everything in it was how he explained, well, I don't need that. Because I know 8 different points on my body that can turn them like an edge of a knife. My elbows, my shins, my fingers. To where you're then still seeing them kick ass because it's more than that superpower that makes them so strong and makes them immortal and in all this other sense. That it's really cool to see this character in a different light than I even knew, you know, what he did. And of course he's saying how he hates ninjas, and of course he's going up against ninjas. Then he goes up against a robotic zombie ninja, and I'm just like, you had me at robotic zombie ninja. That was cool. So, really, really good book. That's all I'm going to say about it right now, because it's definitely not only worth the read, where the words just are amazing, but the art is just phenomenal as well, that it just blends together.
This is one of those books that I missed for whatever reason. I'm not sure why, but... We had a review go up on our website, drunkoncomics.com, if anybody's interested. And you can go take a peek there. And I looked at some of the preview pages, and I went, oh, boy. I just haven't been able to make it back to the store yet to buy it. But, yeah, this is definitely one that after reading that review, after hearing you talk about it and seeing those preview pages, that's all it took for me. So, yeah. Gorgeous pages by Andrews on that, too.
Yep.
So
what'd you get?
My first book that I'm going to talk about this week is The Royals, Masters of War, number 3 of 6 from Vertigo. And this is written by Rob Williams, and the art is by Simon Colby.
And the song is by Lord.
Lord?
Royals?
What?
You've heard that song.
I don't know. Maybe.
We gotta be royals, royals.
No.
Do-do-do-do-do-do.
You know, actually, this is kind of one of those nice moments where we're just going to sit back and sing. colors on this, J.D. Mettler, and letters, Wes Abbott on here. Here's the first thing that I want to say about this, and this is going to sound really shitty when I say it. I figured this would be the issue where I'd pick it up and go, I'm done.
That's what I almost thought that when I heard you pick this up again, that I thought last issue was
the last
that.
Issue was good, but I just figured, you know, like issue one blew me away. Issue two was like, yeah, okay, you know, it's, and I'm like, all right, issue three, I'm going to lose interest and I'm not going to give a shit. Nope. Issue three, better than issue one.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
For people that are not familiar with what's going on in this book, the premise here is that all royal families throughout the world have superpowers. And they've kind of all chosen not to show them, and they've also agreed, basically they've got a treaty not to use them against each other and not to get involved in regular wars. That's what they have the commoners for, is to go and fight for them. Well, the British royal family, the one prince, decides that he's going to get involved in World War II, and now you have all these other royal families that are getting involved. This one is really focusing around the Battle of Midway. And the cool thing about this book, as far as the story is concerned, is that Williams has taken all of these historic events and rewritten them in a way that he's not changing history. He's just showing that these guys could have been involved and they could have been there and part of these battles. And it makes it really, really interesting. So this is a big one where you're seeing the royal family from Japan fighting against the royal family from Britain. And
is there any Americans involved?
There are. Now, the Americans put together their own superhero team.
But were they, like, of blood lineage?
I think it's more or less, like, super soldier serum.
Okay.
Kind of thing. And, you know, they've got Miss Independence and the War Effort are the names of some of these guys that are in there. And you've got the older brother, of the British royal family that's sleeping with Miss Independence, and he's a drunk. He's full of debauchery. Like, you really do hate him.
Is there an Uncle Sam in there?
No, there's not, unfortunately. And the American people are called the Allies.
Okay.
Yeah. But the interesting, like, one of the big things that's going on in here is that you have the older brother who's this drunk, doesn't give a shit. He's an embarrassment to the family. The younger brother, who's the big hero that everybody loves and that, like, the entire world adores. Then their slightly younger sister, now she's a psychic, whereas the older, the brothers can fly and they have super strength. There's this weird, like, borderline incestual relationship between the younger brother and the sister. And the older brother even calls him out, going, "You want to sleep with our sister?" And it's really awkward. There's a ton of tension in the writing in this book, which is what I think pulled me back in, because you're like, you know, it's a really cool fucking premise. But on a story, I'm like, I don't know. But boy, did they make these characters just fucking real. You hate the one brother.
I bet they're fucking real.
Yeah. You really hate, I mean, you detest the one brother. You have admiration for the other brother, but yet there's that weird, does he have feelings for his sister? Because then you don't want to like him.
And here's the thing, awkward. Though, that yes, awkward, but I also have to say kind of historically factual.
Yes.
That happens, and I mean, it's gross. It's that, I mean, Game of Thrones shit does it all the time.
Well,
but
and historically, that's why a lot of these royal families arranged marriages with other countries so that they weren't totally polluting their own gene pool, which also is why one of the reasons how all the royal families have superpowers in this, because they kept going
gotcha.
Around.
It's like an STD.
It burns when I pee, but I can fly. Oh, well. You know? But Yeah, the other thing that I really need to mention on this, and Tony, I've shown this to you before, but the artwork from Colby, and especially the colors here by Mettler, man, do they make this book just pop. And I mean, there are a ton of double-page splashes in here, and normally I'm not a huge page of, or a huge fan of giant splash pages, but when you've got pages, you know, like the ship sinking that's getting exploded from the middle, that literally look like a painting that could be hanging on your wall, I'm highly, highly impressed. If you haven't picked up any of these issues, go grab issue 1 and 2 and then grab 3 and pick it up. You guys will really enjoy this. So that's it on that one.
All right. Well, another book that I want to mention right now, because it was just that incredible, especially for the art. And the story was also kind of good, too, is All New X-Men number 25, the monumental 25th issue featuring the greatest artist roster ever assembled.
Take a breath here.
Written by Brian Michael Bendis and drawn by Marvel.
Yeah.
That's even more names than I even realized until when I was going to say, oh, shit.
We're going to rip through.
I was going to do last names. Tim, Martin, Adams, Ponzer, Mac, Young, Keith, Rodriguez, Ponzer again, I don't know why, Bermeo, Gracia, Williams, Jones, Del Carmen, Campbell, Rufino, Wicks, Shiga, Hip, Wittert, Parker, Wilson, Thompson, Smith, Wieck, Belair, McKay, Becker, Leestra. those last three weren't real. But
also David Marquez in there as well as the primary artist on this. Justin Ponsor was listed a couple times because he colored.
Okay, did a couple of different things.
Different people on there. You actually did damn well on the names, but there was one second to last is Wiechek.
Okay.
But just, I wanted to make sure that he gets his credit where credit's due.
Well, let's talk about the art first, since we just had that tongue twister there. All these pages were awesome.
Well, let's kind of set it up for the readers. Basically, to kind of put it into perspective why they had all these different artists, was it's more or less showing all of these different alternate realities, potential futures, potential pasts, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. So they didn't need to be so cohesive within. Normally, this stuff pisses me off when you're reading a book and a page is not the same, you know, continuing the same art as the previous art. Sometimes you have two different artists and it blends enough to where it's okay. What they call, I think, seeing this before, they call them jam sessions sometimes, where they just have a lot of artists do this.
Well, your normal jam session is, it would be a whole bunch of artists on one page. This is a whole bunch of different artists on different pages. Where it's one page, one big splash page, or
and there are a lot double of splash pages. Yeah. Yeah. And this goes to the total opposite of Iron Fist, where you have one person doing everything. This is the machine. However, it's not dissing it at all. It worked out great, especially for this story of the alternate dimensions.
It's a beautiful idea on how to represent all of these different realities. And because of there were different artists in here, you never questioned what was going on. As you're flipping pages and you're seeing, you know, this character here, this character there, and this is a different style, and what's going on. And, yeah, it was. And these are some of the most beautiful X-Men pages I've seen in a long time. I mean, just in general.
Yeah.
That, like, any single one of these could be made into a print that, again, like the previous book, there are pages I would love to see hanging on my wall. And unfortunately, the only thing that my only complaint with this is I'm assuming, but I don't know, that they list the artist in order of the pages that they did.
Oh, true, yeah.
Because there's some of these that, you know, I think the second one that's in there that's a different artist, I think is the Arthur Adams and John and Justin Ponsor page, which has Jean Grey in the future sitting on a throne of humans.
Mm-hmm.
And holy shit, is that good. I mean, I know that the next page is David Mack because I'm familiar enough with his style and work that's in there. But, yeah, and I mean, I could pick out
This one looked like an Alex Ross, I felt.
I know which one you're talking about on there, and I'm not sure exactly. I'm going to try and maybe count back.
But I don't think it is, though, because, like, Scotty Young is, like, one of the fifth ones in, and his isn't until towards the end. So I don't think necessarily it went in order.
I think that's it. Well, I think it does because of where J. Scott Campbell is in there. I'm familiar enough with his stuff to know. But, yeah, if I had a complaint, I wish that there would have been, like, the artist signatures or page numbers.
Yeah.
In there so you could really tell who did what. But
so beyond the art standpoint, the story, it was very good because although I don't normally listen to our podcasts after I record them, when I was gone, I actually listened to part of last week's podcast, and it got me really intrigued with the what if and Kevin going on about time travel and how the first page of that what if really threw into his mind this perspective of how it is in the Marvel Universe. So I made sure that I read that first page before reading this. I felt this was a continuation because obviously they're talking about time travel. You know, Hank McCoy fucked up. He brought them, shouldn't have been, what he's doing with all these timelines now, what he's now made happen, what could happen, what won't happen. And I like even what Hank says. He goes, well, why are you telling me all this bad stuff? Because there's good stuff too. There's alternate realities. There's a lot of stuff that anything is possible, even from this turning point. And that's true. That's how they've always explained it within the Marvel Universe. So something happens, you're just going on a different alternate universe. So I kind of felt almost like there wasn't that sense of dread until the end when the Watcher said, well, pretty much so now everything's going down the road to ruin. And
it was the one thing.
Oh, and finding out as the Watcher. Did you know as the Watcher talking?
Dude, it was the Watcher.
He didn't have a big head in this, like, silhouette form chilling in the background, really.
Yeah, well, it's because he was sitting really far away. But yeah, I knew it was the Watcher immediately. And here is where I am going to give. Well, that was the spoiler, technically, I guess, in here, if you couldn't figure that one out. But Bendis did one of the most amazing lines in here. Now, once again, here's my thing where I'm going to bitch why I hate the Watcher. Last page, he goes, I'm the Watcher. I do not act. Which is a lie, because he has acted.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I do not act when I choose not to act.
Unless you're Reed Richards, and then here's a nullifier, here's this and that.
Yeah. But the line, though, he goes, I'm the Watcher. I do not act. And you disgust me, Hank McCoy. I was like, fuck!
Yeah.
That is just brutal. Yeah. Yeah, that one really, boy. Well, I mean, that was a fucking slap. Gut punch.
Yeah, and right before that, in the previous page, was just saying, I need help. Help me fix this. And that's kind of why he's saying, I don't do this thing. Here's a thing that I'm also kind of curious. Huge thing coming up within Marvel soon is Original Sin. And I haven't seen the Watcher show up in an X-Men title in forever.
One of the reasons I love the X-Men.
And with all this time travel, all this stuff going on, and him just saying, you know, I can't do anything right now, I almost wonder if some of this, all this time-space continuum stuff, them talking about it a lot more as an organism.
An organism?
Yeah.
Oh, that's just uncomfortable.
That's when you're really happy to be alive.
I'm happy to be part of the ecoverse.
Oh yeah. But that's one of the other reasons is just having him show up in here. I feel like they're gonna have him start popping up in all these books right before he kicks the bucket. So
yeah, I tell you what, I did not hate the Watcher in this book.
Okay,
that's a first. So that right there. Bendis, congratulations. I don't know of another time where I haven't hated him. So that you may have set a new record beyond just having 43 artists on one book. Keeping up with the extravaganza of X-Men, I've got Nightcrawler number 1, written by Chris Claremont and art by Todd Knock on here. And I got a peek because they put the titles, the rest of the back. Rachel Rosenberg did colors. VC's Corey Pettit did letters. And Chris Samney and Matthew Wilson were the cover artists on this book. This book, there's for those of you that don't know, Nightcrawler has recently returned from the afterlife. And
what?
Yeah, and he's not dead. And
but he died. That means he's dead.
Well, you know, this is there's a couple things in here that I actually really enjoyed. And one is the fact that they address the fact that he's dead, he's come back. When Storm is talking to him, and she's asking how he's doing, and he says, you know, I'm not dead. That pretty much says it all. But then she goes, think about that. She goes, you're not the only one who's bent the rules of life. And Claremont writes one of the most beautiful lines when he goes, that's the X-Men stock and trade, perhaps.
Yep.
The fact that he, you know, that he addresses that people are brought back to life on a, unfortunately, all too often regular basis, I think is what really helped make this book feel like, okay, we get it. It's really nice to see Claremont writing another X-Men book again. I mean, it for listeners that are new to this or have forgotten because I've bored them to shit with this story before, I'm an X-Men fan from back in the 80s. That was what really hooked me. And this book feels like coming home. You know, I mean, and the art by Todd Knock in this was gorgeous. He does a couple different little things in here that are, you know, homages to, you know, there's one in particular, an homage to Paul Smith, who's one of my all-time favorite artists back on the X-Men days. But even more so, Tony, I want you to take a peek here. In Nightcrawler's loft apartment, there's a couple different little portraits hanging on the wall, which are very famous covers from one of the X-Men books, and I believe it was Excalibur number 1.
Yeah, it looks like Excalibur, yeah.
Yeah, I think I know it's Excalibur. I think it's number 1. I can't remember what issue of X-Men that is.
Where probably it's, first appearance of Nightcrawler, maybe.
Well, no, it's not the giant size X-Men, and it's not. It might be X-Men 94, but I don't think it is. But it's kind of a really cool thing. Oh, Tony made me drop my book. I'm going to cry now. but it's just neat to see those little Easter eggs hidden in there. Colors in here are fantastic. Panel layouts are fantastic. The expressions, which I think Nightcrawler is probably one of the hardest characters to get real human emotion out of, because the fact that he just has those yellow eyes without the, you know, the pupils and the iris in them, I think that makes it a lot harder. But Knock does a knockdown, drag-out job on doing that in here.
A knockdown?
Yep, a knockdown. you've got Bamfs in here, which used to piss me off a little bit, but I'm starting to like them now. Mm-hmm. And they're used in a good way. They actually kind of help out. They kind of help out with a bunch of little things in the battle. But go pick this book up. If you like superheroes that have, I think, more real emotion to them and more real humanistic issues, this is the kind of book that you should really pick up. So I'm happy. This, I think, if it continues like this, will be my new favorite ongoing series.
That's cool.
So I can't give it enough praise. So that's it for Off the Shelf. Once again, brought to you by MotorCityComicCon.com. Go check them out. What do we got next here, Tony?
Let's quick do Best on Tap, because it's a mouthful here of naming all these characters, which I'm going to do, but not really.
Yeah, because there's 200?
236.
236
characters on the record. Guinness Book of World Records holder, The Wedding of Deadpool, Deadpool number 27 cover. It's a wraparound cover, and that's just a lot of characters drawn into.
You know, I was thinking about this. We normally do our booze in a book at the end of the.
You mean Best on Tap?
No. Booze in a book. I actually thought that even though this is Best on Tap, that this should go with a Guinness because it's a Guinness.
That would have been a good pairing.
A Guinness breaker, world record breaker, or whatever.
Yeah. The cover, Scott Koblish and Val Staples, I'm still looking at all the characters. Luckily, towards the back, there is a cheat sheet guide with the numbered and everything, so you can see the names of the characters if you don't know exactly who they are.
Do they have Waldo in it? Where's Waldo?
That would be hilarious. beyond that, it was $9.99.
Yeah.
It's a thick book, though. I'm not all the way through. It's damn near fucking magazine fucking.
It better be 100 pages.
I will recount those for you, and hopefully it's enough pages for every character to have their own.
I'd say bare minimum, it's got to be 80 to justify a $10 price tag.
Yeah, and that was a thing I couldn't really. Well, I could justify it. I love Deadpool.
You did justify it.
I
know.
But I got a world record book right here. This is going to be worth so much money.
Yeah. Yeah. Collector's issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's our Best on Tap for the week. So let's do some news then.
We should do some news. And actually, with our news, we have an announcement to make that. For all you that have been clamoring for a while, and we put some sneak previews out on Twitter, so if you guys aren't on Twitter, you should be, because sometimes you hear stuff there that you won't maybe on the Facebook and vice versa, or maybe even on the website. We have a new sponsor, friend, partner, whatever you want to call them, Daw Apparel. It's DAWAPPAREL.com, DawApparel.com. If you guys go on there, you can now sport your own very own Drunk on Comics action wear.
I want some action wear.
And by action wear, I mean t-shirts.
I want some t-shirts.
we've got our standard logo shirt, and then we have three other designs up there right now. And when you go on there, not only can you be the cool kid that's wearing the Drunk on Comics stuff, but also, because we're cool and Daw Apparel's cool and we're partnering up, we're also going to save you money.
Because you're cool.
Yeah. And you'll have Drunk on Comics on you, and that makes you even cooler. But having more money in your pocket makes you cooler yet. So if you go on there and you put DOC20, DOC20, in when you're placing your order, you'll get an additional 20% off everything in the store. And on top of that, if you share your purchase on Facebook or Twitter, you get free shipping. So go check out Daw Apparel, check out our new stuff, and when we see you at conventions like Motor City, you can walk in already sporting the gear before even meeting us in person.
And we will sign it.
Yeah, and Tony will hug your leg.
Yes.
So anyway, check them out. We're excited. All right, news. Real news.
We need to bring that up.
Chewbacca is back again
from outer space.
No,
from a galaxy far away.
Yeah, that's where he's from. Peter Mayhew is returning as Chewbacca, which I thought was pretty cool because we know we talked a while back that he was having some knee surgery or something like that. So good to see that he is healthy and getting to reprise the role of everyone's favorite furry co-pilot.
Yep. Speaking about furry co-pilots, and
I'm sitting right here.
I know. we picked up a lot of Batman Death of the Family issues back last year when it came out. Some of them with the covers and the masks and everything. Well, they're coming out with a collection of it with an awesome Joker mask in it.
I understand. I don't understand. What I don't get is how that has anything to do with furry co-pilots.
It did not. That's the you said that's me, so I was like, sweet, you solved my problem of coming up with something.
It's the worst segue ever.
I know.
Speaking of cheese, I'm going to go cut the grass. What? Yeah. Anyway, the Death of the Family collection that comes with that. And I think if I saw correctly that these are hand-painted replica masks on here, which I kind of want one of those.
Yeah, they look really sweet.
Yeah, really creepy, really, really disgusting. Yeah, I might get one and just wear it to the gas station.
Yep. And speaking of death in a family, or death period, but not, Charm returns to comics from Zisco this fall. Because, you know, we have a couple other news tidbits about death.
Yeah, I'm like, he's not going to go there. He's not. Yeah, Charmed is returning to the comic book world with Xenoscope. So keep your eye out for that. And, you know, it's for those that don't know, it was that show with Alyssa Milano and Holly Marie Combs and Shannon Doherty and Rose McGowan. Was that on the CW?
It might have been.
Yeah. The WB.
And speaking of Xenoscope, you know what you can get for a dollar? New Image first.
You know, the worst thing is, I'm trying to keep up with you as far as where you're going with these news stories. And I can't. Yeah. Tony, what can you get for a dollar from...
Well, let me tell you, there are a lot of... Just come on down. So there's a lot of Image books that are coming out with their first again. We've seen a lot of different companies do this from time to time. Some of them you can get, such as Black Science, The Walking Dead, Alex and Ada, Deadly Class, East of West, Lazarus, Manifest Destiny, Zero,
Saga,
Sex Criminals.
Yeah, which, by the way, Tony, we're getting close before the next issue of Saga comes out, so you got a little more reading yet to do.
I know. Delay it just a little bit for me.
Yeah. Speaking of reading things, Conan O'Brien's going to be hosting his late-night talk show from San Diego Comic-Con.
I read comic books at San Diego Comic-Con. I get that.
Yeah, so that actually I'm kind of excited about, just because of the fact that I think it's
neat. I'll tune in to those, especially because he has done a lot of... I mean, his sketches and everything are really funny when he comes up with little skits to do. He's done many things on about video games and just playing video games and just chatting about them, making fun of them. I could see this turn into a pretty well spot for him.
I think that will be pretty awesome. Speaking of other television shows, though, it appears that Comixology has been purchased by Amazon.
Yes, Amazon, the big makers of TV.
This is the worst segue episode ever. Yeah, this is actually huge news, though. With Amazon buying Comixology, one of the biggest things here is that I think people aren't going to have that concern about, well, if this company goes under, I don't have access to my books anymore. Because when you buy a book on Comixology or any of these other type of apps, you're really not actually purchasing the book. You're leasing the right to read it.
That's the reason why I hate digital, because you just paid the same amount as a hard copy. You should own a savable file somewhere on your computer. And
yeah, well, and that's, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that what Image was doing with their own app?
I believe it was them, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's another reason to get dollar first from Image.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it is nice to know there's, I think that there's some security there, and also really shows about how big Comixology has become when you have a company like Amazon purchasing them. Mm-hmm. So what else you got, Tony?
Well, no segue for this, I guess, because I couldn't think of anything. Sorry, I'll just go shoot myself. I'm going to go commit. DC relaunching Teen Titans in July.
Yeah, not only, and I'm going to double up on that one. Not only is Teen Titans coming back in July, Suicide Squad is coming back.
That was my joke of going to shoot myself. Go commit Suicide Squad. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then I went Teen Titans route. And then you actually went into the news that I segue into. Way to ruin it, Derek.
Yeah.
Either or, though, Teen Titans, when they're talking about them, they just relaunched it recently, and then there's a big to-do with this whole Forever Evil, them getting launched into the future, what was going to happen to them, you know, who knows. So at least now we know, I think it's in July, we'll get to see what's going on with the Teen Titans.
The Suicide Squad I'm actually pretty interested in, strictly because of the fact that they've got a few new members in there. Joker's daughter, which I'm not really a fan of that character yet. Deathstroke, which, okay. But Black Manta.
Yeah, when I saw that, I was like, that's interesting. And, of course, they have Harley Quinn, as always. She's the ringleader.
Yeah. So, yeah, I might be checking that one out, the Teen Titans. Maybe not quite as much. Actual segue, other new titles being released. From Aspen Comics, we have Damsels in Excess coming out in July as well. And then it's kind of an interesting thing. I'm going to be curious to see how it goes. Basically, the real quick thing is five realms, five princesses, zero men. So we'll see. Vince Hernandez is the creator on it, and Mirka Andolfo is going to be the artist on that one as well. So that was one that I was kind of interested in. The biggest one that I can't wait, Journey Volume 2 is going to be coming out. And so I'm super excited about that because you guys know how much I really, really love that one. What else did you have, Tony?
Well, the new X-Men movie hasn't even been released yet, and there's already details popping up of the new X-Men film, X-Men Apocalypse, that's not even started or being written yet, let alone filming. But it has been leaked from Bryan Singer that it will have to do with the Age of Apocalypse storyline. However, it won't necessarily create an alternate universe, but there may be some swapping of things that I'm playing with. So really, it could be that, or it could be nothing, because just like how they're doing with the different Days of Futures Past, who knows what it would be. So really, this is once again the X-Men movies sending out so much bullshit about their movies before they're even made. They're going to start casting everyone now before the new movie's released, and then say, oh, this one's getting on the cutting block, and God, I hate those movies, but I can't wait to go see it.
You're just angry because this is going to be better than The Avengers.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows?
One of the things that I don't quite know how I feel on all of this one here is, speaking of Marvel, is that Marvel is pushing the shit out of Original Sin. And I think trying to manipulate so that retailers have to order way more of these than they really, really want. And the main reason I'm not going to buy this is because I can guarantee this comic will be worth a quarter in about 3 months, and I can pick it up in a cheap bin.
So you only buy for the investment, not the story? What if it's a hella good story?
I don't expect it to be that good of a story, although I do.
And there's a lot of stuff building up to this storyline from a lot of different other storylines and books.
I do want to see the Watcher get killed.
And you want those little glowing eyeballs that you can get?
Yeah, I kind of do want the eyeball. Shit, I probably will buy it. Damn you, Marvel. Yeah, they're doing a lot of stuff in here. Obviously, there's tons of different covers that you have to buy X amount of this for, X amount of that for. Also, you have to buy a whole bunch of other books that, and then you have to buy more of these than however many of those you bought. And then I'm pretty sure that those are just glow-in-the-dark
ping-pong balls. That's what it looks like. But they're Watcher eyes.
And they're going to be great for beer pong.
Yep.
Yeah. And they glow-in-the-dark. So, yeah. I guess.
Speaking about glow-in-the-dark eyeballs, did you hear Archie's going to die?
Yeah. Life with Archie, which is basically the future version of Archie. Is he's actually gonna die? And from and here's a huge spoiler. If you don't want to know what's gonna be happening, skip ahead probably about a minute here. He's gonna die more or less sacrificing himself in a heroic end, and it's kind of interesting to see. Excuse me, where I like what they're doing with this and the fact that they're saying that he will die as he lived, which Archie has always been a hero, and he's kind of been the world's hero.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's actually a really neat idea that they're going with, and it doesn't sound like it's just some stupid gimmick.
Well, and it also needs to be said, too, he's still alive right now as a teenager, high schooler, in the main stories. This is a different story book.
Futuristic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on top of that, what I think is weird, though, is that with this Life with Archie, that you see Jughead in here, and he's a zombie. The Afterlife with Archie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, wait, is that a different universe?
Yeah.
Fuck. All right, never mind. speaking of zombies, though, what else you got?
Something just totally random that I had found, which is starting to pick up steam, is there's a comic book movie based off of a Danish comic book coming out called Ant Boy on April 16th, which really has not much to do with anything except for the timing. The comic of Ant Boy. But the timing couldn't be more, I don't know, with all the news to talk about Ant-Man, like many people are going to probably flock to this and the Danish, movie theaters thinking, oh, this is going to be the origin story of Ant-Man, Ant-Boy.
I thought that was Larval State.
Could be. I don't know. But it's interesting. I didn't know there was an Ant-Boy out there. And
There's one other little note on actual films. Real segue, by the way. Jim Starlin's Dreadstar comic book. It looks like it's going to be developed into a film.
So, okay.
More news on that as we get it, but kind of need to see Jim having one of his characters, which I think he actually still has full control of, going into movies. Last thing that I had, Tony, I don't know if you got anything else after that, is that there's a new publisher that's just come out called Magnetic Press, and it's former Archaea publisher Mike Kennedy and former vice president of publishing at Boom Studios, Wes Harris, came together to create this publisher. So when we see some books from them, we'll let you know what we think.
Yeah.
So,
I guess last bit of news, speaking of new press, publishers and everything, let's do Indie Turnpike.
All right. Indie Turnpike. Oh, before we finish, news and notes brought to you by Daw Apparel. Go check them out, guys. You won't regret it. Indy Turnpike this week is going to be Lola XOXO from Aspen Comics. This is number one, and this is a story that written by and illustrated by, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, Sia Oum. It's S-I-Y-A, her first name. Last name is O-U-M. So I apologize if I'm mispronouncing your name. This story is about a little girl named Lola who, more or less in current time, is being shipped off to New York by her parents, or her parents are going to New York and she's being shipped off someplace.
She's shipped off, I believe, to California-ish with her grandparents.
She's in L.A. Being shipped off, regardless, on here. I apologize. It's been a few days since I actually had reread this book. But there's a world catastrophe where it's basically some kind of apocalypse and cities burn and all across the country and things go
very Mad Max-ish.
Yeah, a little bit on the Mad Max-ish side.
Well, one of the things I want to say in there, which was just great storytelling, the art and the writing, was when you get this sense of this small little girl just kind of being scared, not really want to be on the plane by herself. Then her phone breaks. She's asking everyone, for the plane, then has to make an emergency landing in Ohio, which, surprise, surprise, they would survive the attacks. I mean,
well, yeah, there's that.
Who wants to attack Ohio? I mean,
well, Michigan always seems like it wanted to, but
we don't want anything to do with Ohio. Regardless, like, it was very telling of, or you would get a sense of, like, scared little girl. She takes out her phone, it gets stepped on, she's asking everyone to try to call her parents or her grandma, and then you see what's actually happening. Mm-hmm. Like, and then it fast forwards to now.
The one thing that I gotta say too, that is really, really sweet in here though, is that you know, she's asking all these people for help, and everybody's ignoring her, and it's this soldier that looks like he's coming home, you know, from service. He's got his dog tags on, and his name's Conrad, and he reaches out to help. By the way, it's kind of funny, Tony, that we were talking about the Deadpool cover with Where's Waldo, because right in where the section of the book that we're talking about, there is a little Easter egg of Waldo drawn in as a real person in the back on there. But yeah, so this apocalypse basically breaks out, and then it jumps ahead to where Lola is now, I'd say early to mid 20s, based on her look and features in there. But this is one of the most interesting looks at a future, you know, post-apocalyptic world that I've seen, that I've really enjoyed. And it seems plausible, I think, is one of the biggest problems. When you look at Mad Max type shit, it's fun to pretend, but I don't see people putting feathers on their hair and, you know, wearing ridiculous looking outfits.
Well, you got to remember, that's Australia, so who knows what they would do.
No, you're right, that's down under. But
nothing like revolution, though. All the lights turn out.
Yeah. Oh, God. Don't let's not start talking.
Or when the polar ice caps melt and we get Merman, Kevin Costner.
Yeah. No, nothing like that. But this is a great story. It really is kind of a coming of age story of where this young girl is wanting to prove that she can do things. She's wanting to prove that she is smart enough and capable enough to take care of herself and that she deserves more responsibility. She wants to find her parents. And it's a beautiful character study, I thought, just overall. There's some good action in here. It has a little bit of that bar. When she goes into the bar and the fight breaks out, it kind of has a little bit of that Old West feel to it.
And she's kicking ass, like...
Yeah, yeah, and she's showing that she can handle herself. You know, obviously, I think your main villain protagonist shows up at the end of this book. I'm not going to spoil anything there, but awesome story. Let's talk the artwork. This is fucking gorgeous. Like, I mean, this is really, really pretty art. It's got a hint, not much, but a small hint of the Japanese style manga to it. More when Lola is a young girl and she's got those really large eyes that are in there. But there's the beautiful backgrounds. I mean, this book looks like it was painted, even though I know that there's a lot of it that was, as far as colors and all that, I'm sure were done digitally. But beautiful representation of a new look and layout, you know, style to a book. But it's easy to follow. I really enjoyed it. And I think this could be Aspen's newest big hit that you know. Because Aspen puts out some great books, and I love when they come out with new stuff. And this is one of the reasons why I've loved Aspen as much as I have for so long. So go pick up Lola number one. I'm sorry, Lola XOXO. And I do like there was one little note in there with the XOXO as to why it's there in the story. Mm-hmm. And it's a nice touch. It's not over the top. So grab it. Check it out.
All right.
That's it for Indie Turnpike. Tony, whip out your liver and let's do some booze in a book.
Yes. So there's so many boozes that I can pick from.
Oh God, put your liver away. That's disgusting.
As I'd mentioned before, I was in the City of Sin, and there is just booze flowing out of the frickin' toilets. Like, you can... I meant to say shower, but... drinking fountain, whatever. But toilets work too.
I drink out of the toilet. I'm not ashamed.
There's booze everywhere, and... I could have just gone with one, you know, when we just be lazy and kind of say, pick something with something. But one of the things that I found the most that fucking Las Vegas loves is frozen, colorful, Slurpee-ish concoctions. Booze-filled frozen drinks. And
is it because it's hot? They like it frozen?
It wasn't. It was nice, perfect weather. It was actually
cool, yeah, breeze. This time of year.
It could be that, too, and it probably is cheap. Who knows? But you're looking at all these colors. You're looking at all this stuff. And the book that I felt most encompasses all this is Flash Gordon, number one, that just recently came out by Dynamite, mainly because Flash is that everyday man that is like a hero in this world. I felt like a fucking hero in this city, man. People were just coming up to me left and right, girls saying, hey, you want to go here? You want to go there? So I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm Flash.
Remind me, Tony, that I need a shot of penicillin after shaking your hand when I saw you earlier today. That's awesome. Last call, or did we have anything else before we wrap up?
I didn't have anything else. I mean, we could start coming up with different headlines for shit we're not talking about.
Yeah. Terrible segues. All right, last call. The couple that I really wanted to give a big shout-out to this week, Manifest Destiny, number 6 from Image, from Chris Dinges, Matthew Robertson, Owen Gianni. This book finally finished up its first story arc, and this is a fun fucking book. So.
Another fun book, which I'm very happy that they've announced they are not ending it. At number 15, like a lot of people speculated at the end of the Superior run, is Superior Foes of Spider-Man. They can still call them Superior Foes, whatever, or they can just call it Foes of Spider-Man, but I'm glad that this team is still going to be zany, goofy, being the team of the foes.
Twilight Zone number 4 from Dynamite.
I was pissed. I didn't notice that until I saw it today that it was out.
What? You missed it?
Yeah.
Well, they may have sold out by the time we got there. But this wrapped up the first story arc.
Okay. Was it good?
It was really good. And here's what I liked the most about it. And this gives nothing away. The next story arc is slightly tied into the first. It's one of those things that somebody in the life of one of the people in this comic had a slight interaction with, you know, well, the next story arc, that person had slight interaction with the person from the first story arc.
Okay, so it's kind of connected, but they're separate stories. And
it's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of thing, okay. But it's a cool way for them to be able to continue the book without having to start a renumbering system. So, yeah, that was that one.
Two indie books that I always talk about a lot, so I'm just going to say pick them up, read them. Astro City number 11 and FPB number 9. Still two great books, continuing great stories.
Daredevil number 1.50, which is a collection of 3 stories in there. And it's the 50th anniversary of Daredevil this year. And so that was kind of one of the neat things on there. Also, the cover, this definitely had the honor roll mentioned for me as a Daredevil junkie. It's Daredevil kind of jumping around with the city in the back, and there's all this graffiti with all of the names of creators that worked on Daredevil.
That's cool.
In the past. I thought that was really nice homage on there.
Unity number 6, still showing the team can be a unit.
You're a unit. Dead World Restoration number 5. Awesome miniseries with that. Very happy with the way that worked out. Especially huge shout out to Sammy Mackinnon on art on that. It's the most just beautifully terrifying shit I've ever seen in my life.
Last one that I have that I want to mention is Iron Man number 24. I've read a lot of Iron Man in my life. It's very interesting what they're doing with these Mandarin rings and the sentience of them and not being with the Mandarin and pretty much turning anyone that grabs them into, like, Power Ranger superhero bad guys. Like, really, really cool, interesting story right now.
I like the Mandarin rings. I prefer the Tangerine rings myself. But All New Ghost Rider number 2. I know, Tony, that you're not a fan because he's Ghost Driver, not Ghost Rider. But, yeah, this car kicks ass.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say. And even more so, you start to see, because I was like, well, what's he going to have? Is he going to have his own chain? You see in the preview of, the, I think it's the next issue or whatever it is, yeah, he's going to have a chain. And it's cool.
So does he knows he's being possessed? Like, he is understanding he is, or when he is possessed, he doesn't know?
He's just learning what's going on.
Okay.
In this. And, yeah, it's like, art by Trad Moore is ridiculous in this one. Last two that I've got, The Walking Dead, what number are we on now? 125. Spoiler.
Is it done?
I think somebody dies.
Ooh.
Who?
No, I said ooh.
Yeah.
I could, who, then you could tell us.
It may or may not be somebody that's been in the story. and then the last,
Watcher?
Yeah, the Watcher. Yeah, they've got Uatu in there. The last one I need to give a big shout out for, last call, is Robin Hood Legend number 2. From Xenoscope, written by Pat Shand, which I'm super excited to get to talk to him at Motor City, because, damn, he's a good writer. So, that's all of them that I read that I really felt that had to be shared with you guys. There were obviously more, but those were the best of the best this week.
For some more of the best, definitely go to our website, drunkoncomics.com, where you can see some of the reviews for some of our reviewers posted right there. Some that we've mentioned, some that we've talked about on the air, and some that we may not have.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just a different look, like with Iron Fist. I mean, Tony gave his side of it. You know, we've got another review up there from our good buddy Patrick that put his review down there. You know, it's just a whole nother look at those kind of things. So, yeah, check that out. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. Make sure you're following us on Facebook. We do have Instagram. We still don't really know what the hell we're doing with it. So, but you can follow us there. And then, yeah, website. What else am I forgetting?
Call us anytime you want, day or night.
Yeah. Tony's number is
867-5309. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Tony, who can I turn to?
Well, that about does it for me. How about you, Derek?
There's something I'm forgetting, and I'm not kidding.
Well.
Oh.
Oh, you do remember.
Well, I know one thing we forgot.
What?
Well, we're terrible people. We forgot to mention our favorite comic book store in Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
Fanfare Sports and Entertainment. Indy Turnpike was brought to you by them. So, yeah, check them out at fanfare-se.com, and they have lots of cool original art. And, yeah, go buy some new, what did I call it, sporting wear?
Yeah, sporting apparel.
Yeah, go get some tactical shirts. I don't know. Yeah, so speaking of tactical shirts, we'll see you next week.
Yep, keep reading your comics, and we'll be back to you next week with more reviews, more nuggets, more segues.
This is where we do the outro.
Let's go to the bar.
Tell me all your problems, 'cause they don't understand how life can make you feel, so just let the tears all run down. Standing in the back row, looking over the crowd, you see, everybody looks right, and everybody talks the same, but I don't see myself that way. Don't forget where you belong.
Where you belong.
Find your place before it's gone. Now you're inside looking out. Some of things will turn around, you'll see. Right, not because it's okay. Right, and everybody talks the same, but I don't see myself that way.